This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Welcome everybody to Trapping Across America. This is your host Clint Locklear, and we're going to be covering, like normal, a host of different topics on trapping. The convention season is coming up, which will give me the ability to start running a bunch of interviews again. I always enjoy those. I can do those over the phone, but I'll be honest with you. If you on the phone, it's hard to have interactions and see what someone else is saying and all that type stuff. And I may end up doing some over the phone till the convention season really kicks off, just to have a more variety of stuff, so you don't have to listen to me all the time. But To me, they're just not as good, and they're never as clear, even though I've tried all different kind of ways. But we're going to be – I'm really looking forward to the convention season this year. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. As far as the numbers of the show goes, I think it's going to be a pretty decent season, actually. I know the fur prices aren't what everybody wants them to be, but if you've been in any long time, that just goes up and down, up and down. I mean, it's insane. Drive you crazy always trying to figure it out. But, you know, there's just that common ebb and flow of what the fur market does, and it's always interesting to me. The guys that always come out year after year are the guys that trap year after year, and the guys that try to play the market are usually the biggest losers of the bunch, except for maybe one out of three or four cycles. Because this year the prices were way down. They could be down next year or high next year. You don't know. But when the fur market starts changing, if you don't have product, you can't sell it. I mean, it's as simple as that. And by the time the word trickles back down through everybody and people start finding out about it, now guys try to get their stuff together, they try to order product, they try to get their trap lines laid out, this, that, and the other. Most of the time, by the time that, okay, the fur price is going to be high, especially northern states, a lot of y'all are already getting hammered by Mother Nature, and you're kind of out of luck. And then you wait till next year. So you gear up for the next year. And if it's not what you want, you back out. And it's like an abusive cycle that trappers put themselves through when they only think about the money year in and year out. But the guys that trap year in and year out, especially if you store some fur, it always seems to work out in the long run. You know, just trap what's there and you have what's there and let the, you know, you can kind of see what the market is as far as what you sell it for. But I'm curious of how the conventions are going to be. With the fur prices the way they are, I see the trapping industry has changed a lot from when I started, you know, a couple decades ago. It was more money based at that time. There's no question about that. Everybody likes to make money. We're Americans. There's nothing wrong with making money. But it seems like now it's turned more into a sport, way more than a sport, way more of a way for people to communicate on social media platforms and stuff like that. And I think all that's great. As long as people are trapping, I'm happy with it. Because when you do get those big licks and you're smart about your money, it can be life-changing if the person takes care of their finances that way. And I think that's a really cool thing. Now, I had an interesting call the other night. And if somebody knows, not guessing, not heard, but knows, I've got an interesting question to ask everybody. I had a gentleman call who's been trapping a pond. And if you've never trapped a pond beaver for ADC, especially after someone else has goofed with them, those can be some of the most aggravating things in the world to catch. Not catch some, but catch them all. Because a pond is very different from a creek or a river or a swamp. When you're in a pond or a small lake, those beaver, I mean, you're in their living room. That's all they get to look at is that little bitty body of air. And anything that's out of the ordinary or someone coming in there at certain times every day and then negative impact starts happening on their family, they respond very quickly. So pond beaver is one of those. I can tell you, someone that's done a lot of ADC work for beaver, I cringe when I see that situation. And I got this phone call from a gentleman, and he was asking about shooting. And I really couldn't help him because I really don't know. I could guess, but I don't know. So if anybody knows about what I'm getting ready to talk about, let me know. And then send it in an email or something, and I will try to. It'd be nice if you had a link or something, some study done on it, where, you know, it's just not one of those, well, I've always heard, or this, that, and the other. He was asking about lights. The landowner has been going out there with a regular spotlight, like a Q-beam. And excuse me, guys. Okay. He's been going out there like a Q-beam. and trying to shoot some of the last remaining beaver after the other guy. And then apparently this gentleman came in and started doing a trapping. He does lots of trapping. And he was asking about how to go about doing that. Is a red light or a green light better for beaver? And I really don't know. And I had to tell him, you know, I don't really have that information, because years now I use a Generation 3 a night vision scope. And I can tell you that the beaver do respond different if I put the IR light on. So they definitely can see IR. You know, I can definitely tell the difference with that. And so if I just use the Generation 3 night vision scope without the IR, you know, and there's any type of light whatsoever, stars, moon, I mean, it's just not like, like you're probably hearing thunder in the background. We're getting hammered with rain again. But if it's a real stormy like night and there's absolutely, and you're way, 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 way away from any towns, houses, this, that, and the other, and you literally can't see your own hand in front of your face, just a night vision device without IR, you're only looking at probably 50, 60 feet. And a lot of times a beaver, that's plenty. But I know the IR does affect the beaver. And so he was asking about the red lights and the green lights. And I really don't know. But I did tell him, if you're going to try one of those, this is the way I went through the thought process with this gentleman on the phone, and it's something to try if you find yourself in this situation. If the beaver is seeing the light, most of the time, as soon as they show up on the water and there's a light, there's a shot. So if I was going to have to go in after all that, what I would do is I would try to figure out some way to either have different lights or some type of battery apparatus, or see if you can get some type of little solar panel type thing and hook to your light. Because when I'm thinking about these lights, back when I used to use them, you know, they were like the coon lights, the night light type thing, and they had the batteries on there. And I don't know if you can externally charge those somehow. It could be something you could do with just putting a red lens on a Q-beam and use a battery light out there and change out batteries. But what I would do is I would let the beaver, wherever I was going to be shooting from, I would put the light there shining out on the water and just let it sit at night on for 3 or 4 days. Because at this point in the job with this gentleman, there's probably only going to be one or two. And you want to get them both pretty much at the same time. And you want them to be out enough where you can see them, and you don't want them to be spooked. Now, if they can see the red or the green or whichever, I think he's going to go with red. If they can see that, it's going to be a little bit different. And if after, you know, 8-9 hours of coming out at night and nothing bad happens, just like every other animal, eventually they don't worry about it. Now, since we have more brain power than a beaver, if we give them that situation and we let them see the light, I can only assume, and all this is an assumption now, guys, I can only assume at that point you could then be behind the light and use it to your advantage where the beaver wouldn't be afraid of it. Just the thought process. But if someone knows, and there's been some studies done, and there may have been, is a green or a red light better for a beaver? That's just one of those pieces of information I may never use now since I use night vision, but it's just one of those things that'd be cool to know. So you can email me that at clint@wolfernation.com if you know anything, if you have any links, maybe some of the Predator magazines or something, or shooting magazines have done something like that. I really don't know. Now I want to talk about a few different things tonight. And first I'm going to talk about something, and I have to admit, guys, and I'm embarrassed about this, but I had all these notes set up so I didn't forget anything. And I was going to talk about just some of the aspects of securing traps on the most basic level, but some of the pluses and minuses that I've noticed over the years from this. And I can't find those anywhere. So I'm going to have to try to do this off the top of my head, and hopefully I don't forget anything. But when you're going out trapping, the weakest link in your equipment is normally what's going to fail. you know, if you've got a rope and you're trying to pull somebody out and it's rock solid all except for one part that's about cut in half, you can imagine it's only as strong as that. Kind of like the old saying, you know, chain's only as strong as its weakest link. And that's been used in a lot of different type formats like that. But when we think about trapping, a lot of times we get excited about the type of trap, the modifications, the type of set, the lures, all this other stuff. And then there's a tendency to either ignore or overcompensate for chain and swivels and different ways to secure snares, where they're using aluminum or steel, or if the cable's different and all that. And it'd be nice if there was a way. And I mean, if you overcompensated everything and you made everything completely grizzly bear proof, I guess it wouldn't matter. But at the same time, you're going to be spending a ton of money on something you could be spending it on other parts of your trap line that maybe that money would be better used. Because everybody, for the most part, has got some type of budget. And I know most trappers don't write down a trapping budget. But, you know, you start ordering stuff. You get 3 or 4 dozen extra traps, and you're going to start changing out swivels, and you're going to start changing out chain and rivets and all this type stuff. You've got to, at least over time, I promise you will, you'll start paying attention to that. If you're not using it straightly stock, you're going to have to figure out, okay, if this trap costs $200 a dozen, and now I've got another $60 in parts that I want to add on for whatever reason, now you're talking about $260 piece of equipment. And that becomes very clear as you start playing with more high-end stuff. Like I can tell you, when I take my CDRs to Texas, when you look up at the price of the CDRs, the price of the modification, the price of the expand pans, the big pans and stuff like that, then the extra chain and the extra swivels and the saber-tooth drags that I'm using on that, I've got close to $400 to $420 in each single dozen traps. So eventually it will come to your mindset about what this stuff costs. And if it's worth it or not, because I mean that's really how you exchange money for something anyway, is the value there. And if you don't think about these things, or you make knee-jerk reactions, you can waste money or you can spend money right where you need it in the sweet spot. And that's something that you as an individual trapper has got to figure out. Now I'm going to say some things, and if you don't agree with me, I'm perfectly fine with that. I'm not attacking anybody. If you like one certain thing and I say I'm not sure it's really needed, I'm not attacking you, because I'm talking about a third party's piece of equipment. So if you find yourself wanting to start hollering at the radio or something, don't do it, because I'm not being aggressive towards anybody. These are just my own personal things that I've seen over the years, that it, especially if you're getting into new to trapping, or you're looking at other traps, or you're into the the concept that a coyote is a 700 pound steroid power lifting speedster that can pull down a house, or with one jerk of a chain type thing. Maybe you don't have to go that far, and you can spend that money somewhere else on your trap line where it makes more sense. So when I get a trap and I'm looking the trap over, most of the time I do this at a convention. Or if I can't find one at a convention, I will order one or two. Most of the time it's two, but sometimes it's just one. But the reason I normally order two is because if you only order one trap, that's all you can go off of. But believe it or not, there's a lot of traps you buy. If you buy two, you'll see that the manufacturing process of that trap is loose or sloppy, or the way they're put together is different. And then if you're going to do that, there's a good chance you're going to be getting 12 pieces of equipment that are going to be different. And now I'm going to have to be spending way more time tuning than I may want to on that piece of trap because of the way that it's manufactured. There are traps out there that when you set them down, you'll see that the base plates aren't always at the same place, or they're a little bit different in thickness, or the jaws, some of them you got to play with, or the springs got to be goofed around with, or the pans on there, I mean, completely off the wall to the second one. Sometimes they're at an angle, sometimes they're parallel at an angle, all this type of stuff. So if you get two traps, at least you can see if they're consistent. But I rather do that at conventions, because a convention is really neat. Because if I'm looking at like when I started looking at the number two Bridger Douglas, I was using the number three because I ordered a half a dozen of them from Tim Sun, and I got them. I played with them, liked them, modified them. It looked like it'd be the good thing. I ordered some more. I went out and used them. They were good. Okay, I go to some states that I can't use that size trap. Is the number two going to be just as good, or is there going to be some difference in variances or whatever? So when I'm at a convention, I can physically put those up, roll them around in my hand, set the trap, fire the trap, look how everything's working. Is it a miniature version, or leverage points out of whack from the bigger trap? You know, because most of the time what happens, at least what it looks like, is someone will have an idea for a quote coyote trap, whatever size that is, and they build that trap and they tune that trap and they modify that trap and they make sure that trap works just the way they want it to work. And that trap in that line, whatever their signature, whatever that trap is very consistent. But when they start moving that up and down the scale from bigger to smaller, because of leverage and different things that happen because of leverage and points and pressures and different things like that, spring strength, stuff starts to sometimes go a little sideways. And you don't know it until you physically look at it or go use it. And that's the reason I like going to conventions, because I can set over a course of 4 days, like at the Nationals, if I'm thinking about a Trap X, you know, I can look it over. I can let my subconscious brain mull it over. I can talk to some other guys about it. I can go back and fiddle around with it some more. And I can do it at different tables, so I'm not like, you know, just sucking up space on somebody's table. But when things slow up, I can go around and kind of piddle, and it works really good. But when I get these traps, I start thinking about, what do I need to do to the trap, or do I need to do anything with the trap from the way it comes to fit me in the way that I trap? So what I'm normally looking at with that is the swivels, the J hooks, the chain, how the chain is hooked up to the trap. Do I like the way that it is? Do I see issues possibly with the way that it is? And if you're a new trapper, you're probably not going to see that. Unless there's just some type of blatant screw up going on, because like over the years, I've got to play around and see so many traps in action over so many different type of environments and different weather situations, that if something's a problem, it will show its ugly little head. And then when you see that on another piece of equipment, you go, whoa, not sure about that one. Now I could fix it, or I could get something else, or it's not really that big a deal and I could just tweak it a little bit and I'm going to get the results that I want. But a lot of times, with a lot of guys, they get a stock trap, and I'm going to start with one that I've got really close friends that thinks I'm crazy about this. When I first started coyote trapping, I was using the number three Bridger standard doggone trap, just the standard Bridger number three. And the first ones I bought three or four dozen of them. They were straight stock, that's all I could afford, and I went out and I started using them, and I think I actually I could weld enough that my lamination would stay on there most of the time, so I would put, at that time, believe it or not, number 9 wire was the track modification of choice. Of course, this was, you know, years and years ago. And I could get, that was soft enough that I could weld those on there at my skill level at that time, and most of them would stay on. And it was a dangerous thing after I welded on lamination in my shop, because when I dry fired that trap, I'd always turn my head and close my eyes, because every now and then one of those would come off and almost like stick in the wall or break a window. So, you know, that's kind of where I was at that time. But I had these stock traps, and the Duke has a ring on the bottom that's square and goes around the cross of the trap. And that's what the chain is hooked to. Well, you go out and use that. I never had one fail. Never. Never had one fail. But you did learn pretty quickly because of the way, and this is how you got to start looking at your traps. You've got to start, you don't want to go in analysis paralysis per se, but you've got to logically go through what you're using. That metal ring, if it was on anything that would push it up because of the way that the pan sat low, close to the cross, it could actually stop the pan from going down. And I've had that happen several times. Well, once you kind of figure that out, which took me a few times to figure out what was going on, it's not a big deal. You slide it over to the side. Now it can't touch the pan, and the issue is solved. And I didn't have to put a base plate or do any welding or send it off somewhere to have somebody do anything, because after a while I could just slide that over. And for, I bet, 6 or 7 years, I used stock chain, and I used stock swivels and stock J-hooks. Today, that's almost looked down on like you're being, a non-ethical trapper, because a J-hook's going to break. They're not like the modern swivels where they're crunch proof. It's a Taiwanese chain, so you need to get that, and you need to put American chain on that, and you know, you start looking into that one, and next thing you find out, pretty much all chain comes from China, then is sold through American companies. So, you know, really what is it? You know, you learn to check the chain on the Taiwan chain. You know, you would take it through your hands and you would look at where the welded links were together. If it was welded all the way around, usually no problem. But every now and then you'd come across one. It only takes you maybe 5 seconds to do this per trap. You'd look at each individual chain link where they were welded. If they came all the way together, no problem. If there was a gap, because they weld those things with machines, if there was a gap, that's going to be a very weak part of that chain, and I'd cut that chain out and just put in an extra swivel. No big deal, you know. But I was conscious of that. So when I would get a number 3 Bridger trap, I pretty much would give it a quick check over. I would make sure that the jaw set level, because sometimes you'd have to tweak the outside of the levers with a pair of pliers to get one side to set level with the other. I would, if there was any, you know, roughage on the end of the dog or where it meets the back of the pan, I might take a file of that. I might square it up a little bit. Very simple things. I'd make sure the pan was level when it was set to where I wanted it, with my way that I like a pan to fall a little bit. So, and it would still fire plenty well with it not hitting the base plate. And pretty much I'd go use that trap. And that's all I would do. But over time, guys, it just like in anything else, it seems like people overcomplicate things to the point of insanity. And a lot of that is marketing driven. The stock chain that came on the number 3 Bridger was, if I remember right, number 2 size chain, and now it's not really number 2 because they're in millimeters, and since I'm not English, I have no idea what that is, but I can look at it enough to know, yeah, that's good enough for a coyote. But what a lot of guys are doing, because you read forums and you read books and you watch demos, and people's got to say something, and they've got, if someone talks about chain, you know, someone will bring up a problem, then everybody will dogpile on that problem. And I think half the stuff is made up by the time the post is over with, about all the train wrecks and this, that, and the other. And I can honestly say, of using some of, I still use some of those bridgers today. I still have some of those bridgers with stock chains, stock rivets, and stock swivels. I've only had one rivet break out of 15 years, say, 16 years, maybe in closer to 20 years. One rivet break. But I hear all the time, if you don't replace them, the way they come out of the factory and the way this and that and the other, and there's always a big story behind it, that they're going to break. So you just, the smartest thing to do is buy a $200 trap or a dozen traps, cut the chain off, throw it away, or put it on muskrat traps. And then you go buy number three American chain with crunch proof style swivels, which there's nothing wrong with crunch proof style swivels at all. I've played around with them. They work fine. They work great. But I think it gives a trapper a false sense of security. It's kind of like sometimes people get their traps, and if you've ever seen not movies, guys, but if you've ever really watched documentaries where they show actual SEALs or actual SF guys or actual Rangers with pictures or video during actual combat, their M4s, their AR-15s, do not look like all of the gadgets and stuff that people put on them for home defense. They went to using EOTechs and Trigicons for scopes, which is a heads above in a combat situation to have to looking down peep sights. Great. Some of them may actually have a flashlight if they're on a breaching team. There are some units, and we were playing around this a little bit over in Desert Storm, where you could put a laser on the side of your gun, and then with your night vision, if you used IR, you could see the laser. The problem was, if anybody else had infrared, they could see it too. So all they had to do is track the beam back and pull the trigger. But that's really about it, you know. You don't see them with bayonets. You don't see them with all these different type of flashlights and strobe lights and mini sights on the side and big sights on top and a way to flip on the other side, and you got sights coming up. And I mean, there's so much jewelry, expensive jewelry, that civilians put on guns that they put in a safe pretty much forever. And it makes them, I guess it's a guy thing, you know. It makes you feel better about what you're doing, no matter what happens, no matter how bad the zombies are or the federales are or whatever, no matter what happens, I've got it on here. Now you've turned a 7-pound rifle into a 14-pound rifle that you might as well have just got a 308 AR if you're going to carry that type of weight anyway. And you've got all this junk that the first time, if you ever had to jump on the ground or banged against the wall, half of it's going to shatter or fall off. And you've got all this stuff that you really don't need. But then you look back at guys that live and die by their M4s today, or their MP5s, or whatever they're using, and you don't see all this stuff on here. Now, on the movies, I mean, they got all kind of crap on there. They can even, you know, like, they got a washer and dryer in the buttstock. But not in real combat. And the reason I'm saying that is, I think sometimes guys, they spend a lot of extra money and a lot of extra time, that when that they could use that resource somewhere else, putting all this jewelry on their traps and doing all this stuff when it's really not necessary. It doesn't hurt anything per se, but it's really not necessary. Now, after 15 years and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of coyotes, if I've only had two swivels that were bit and crushed, and I never lost a coyote, mind you, from that. Never. But two swivels, because I remember them both. Because I'm looking at them, and I always have extra stuff in the truck, so I remember replacing them. I remember I can take you to both spots. They're in Marion County. Never had a Western coyote do that. Just never did. The bigger Eastern coyotes, they can, you know, it's just a bigger animal. They can do some stuff probably. But I've had a chain break, and I've had one rivet break, and I've had two swivels crunched in 15 years. Now, just the law of averages. If you put in all the animals caught and all the trap nights and all this, that, and the other, you're not even dealing with a percent. You're dealing with like point something percent. So from a logistical point of view of your trapping, is cutting off the chain and adding the latest and greatest, best marketed, this, that, or the other to the trap chain really that important? You know, not really sure. And the same thing with shock springs. Guys, I know there's a lot of guys that swear by shock springs. And most of the time, the guys that need shock springs, the way they started with the soft catch traps is because the trap is too weak to begin with, and they're trying to compensate for that. And you get a modern, you stick a shock spring on a number 3 Bridger Douglas or MB650 or whatever it is that you're using, and it's a good stout heavy laminated coyote trap, I don't see how that shock spring helps you at all. I really don't. But you're talking what, 30, 40 by the if you got to pay someone to put them on, $50 extra per dozen traps for that. You know, I played around with them. They're from when they started, guys, they're 100% better than they were then. I can tell you that. When I first started playing with shock springs, they looked like things that were you would put on a screen door. I mean, the old-timey screen doors, not the modern springs, but the old-timey ones where they would kind of flop down. And you're doing good to get two coyotes before one of them tore it off because it was a little bitty thing. But the trap manufacturers had to do something because they were trying to force a weak trap on an animal that you couldn't do that with. Then I think somewhere along that time JC Connor comes out with his, and I'm kind of amazed at that he thinks he needs that with a Jake trap, which is probably one of the strongest traps on the market. I mean, there's no way a coyote's coming out of that trap. There's no way. A shock spring's not going to make any difference on that. There's a lot of guys that thinks it helps with different issues as far as takes the power out of them and this, that, and the other. But there again, if you're having to do that, is it a need or is it M16 jewelry? Because wouldn't it be better to not have to have a piece of equipment you don't have to compensate for, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Now, I do use them on cats. I will say a shock spring for a cat trapper, in my opinion, is a necessary evil that you've got to do. So a lot of my traps do have shock springs on there that I coyote and cat trap for, because I don't have individual traps for the both. So they do have shock springs on there for that. The shock spring on a bobcat, if you've ever watched a bobcat through night vision footage, most of them, when they get caught, they'll jump about 4.5 feet up in the air. And they do it at like lightning speed. It's not like they you know, crouch down and try to jump up or something like that. It's just like a cat, if you walked up behind one and slapped your hands, he's in the air. And he's already running before he hits the ground. And I could see, because I saw some cats that would power out of strong traps in that half of a nanosecond before they hit the end of the chain. And what I think a shock spring does for a bobcat is it takes the power out of that first initial lunge for that less than 1 second. So the trap has a chance to grab a hold and set just a little bit. Because once they come back down, the game's over. If you can hold a cat for the first nanosecond, you've got him. That first nanosecond is where you lose cats. Unless you just got a really bad setup. So I do believe in the shock springs for that. But that's like $40. If I can check a chain, I don't see links that are, you know, if it just looks like bad chain or it's really rusted chain, and I don't mean physical, just on the outside where it looks a little rusty. I'm talking about really pitted. I'm not replacing the chain. I'm not. I buy enough chain for drags that I'm not going to go through cutting them off of traps. I never just replace swivels with a more heavy duty one, because out of that point, you know, 0.00003% of the time, I'm going to have a coyote crunch a swivel. I'm going to spend that money somewhere else. To me, I'd rather spend that money and buy a couple extra traps. That's just me. I'm not saying you're wrong by doing any of that stuff. But think about why you're doing that stuff, and don't think about it in terms of that's just what I've always been told. Because if you do things like that, that means you're going to be easily manipulated, not only in trapping, but in every other part of your life. Because advertising is powerful. And if you understood how people can manipulate people with advertising, that understand advertising, you can get them to buy a lot of stuff they don't need for reasons that they don't even care about, but they think they do, and it doesn't do them any good to begin with. That's the reason people buy upgrades in cars, and they buy houses they can't afford, and they gotta have certain amount, they gotta have certain logos on clothes, and there's something about that tribalism in a human. That if you think your other tribe's doing it and you're not, you're gonna go through great pains to get it. Sometimes the tribe is right, sometimes the tribe is wrong. But you don't have to worry about the tribe when you're coming to your trapping, because it's your equipment on your trap line, and you need to take responsibility of why you do or do not do something. And that's kind of what I want to get out there. Don't waste your money just because there's money to be wasted. Use that resource somewhere else if you need it. But if you're in Wisconsin or the UP of Michigan, and you're actually snagging 15, 20 wolves a year by accident or something like that, I don't have any experience with wolves. If they choose stock swivels like candy, well, then you're going to need to beef that baby up. But for most of us in the lower 48, we're not having that issue. Not in reality. You know, I mean, everybody can come up with a picture of something crazy that happened. That don't mean it happens all the time. And I'll give you a good example of this. People will today not let their kids go to parks, will not let them walk down the street by themselves, will not let them go over to friends' houses unless they take them over there, this, that, and the other. Because it's more dangerous today than it was when they were kids. Where if you talk to someone that's my age, you know, my idea of fun was going to the beaver swamp and playing army in amongst alligators, water moccasins, wasps, having no food, no water, no cell phones, no nothing, and we'd be gone for 12 hours a day, and the parents knew we'd be back when we got hungry. But if you look statistically, the parents today that would be absolutely, you know, and it's not just helicopter parents and everything like that. I'm talking society thinks that people are you know, there's a child molester or a kidnapper behind every bush in every city in every state in America. You go to look statistically, which is math, which has no emotions whatsoever, you'll find out that there's less kidnappings today. There's less molestation today in America. There's less crime against kids in America today. So the kids are safer than we were, and we had more freedom, and very few of us had any issues. But you can't do that today, because if you do, someone will call the law and they'll pick up your kids because it's more dangerous today. But it's not logically or realistically, but the impression that causes parents to not let their kids be kids and not let their kids do anything without supervision, or for goodness sake, walk a half a mile to a park by themselves, is marketed to them every time they watch the news or listen to a politician or listen to another mom, or they get on Facebook or whatever it is they're doing, because they're hearing about these isolated incidences in another country, in another city, and they're making decisions based off of one or two things that's happening that has nothing to do with anywhere that they're at. And a lot of times trapping is the same way. It just becomes fashionable to have certain things on certain traps. And as an individual, if you're going to be a critical thinking trapper, you need to figure out if it's worth it or not. And I will say, I do know some guys that treat their traps probably better than they do their children. And in their way of artwork style trap modification and chain modification, it's a hobby. I mean, it has nothing to do with the animal. It's because they like doing it. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, I've had some students that's made traps for other students, and I've been given some of them that are freaking artworks. I'm not going to go use these things. I mean, they're impressive. I'm super impressive. Everything about them's impressive, from the tip of the end swivel to the lamination on top that's been ground where it looks like it's one solid piece of billet metal. Amazing. Needed to catch animals? No. Not at all. Needed not to have damage? Not at all. But if you're in the trap art world, you know, that's okay. But just think about what you're doing. The same thing with your, really think about how you're securing stuff, whether it be your chain, you know. And if you notice that you get some J-hooks and you look down and you can see that they're more open after you used them a few times than when you went to use the trap, that's a good time to get rid of those J-hooks or just weld them. One of the two. A welded J-hook ain't never going to come open. But at the same time, especially with the thicker J-hooks of the day, welding J-hooks to me is just a waste of energy. I mean, it really is. It sounds cool. I give you that. I mean, it sounds impressive to have when someone looks at your stuff, but it's not practical in the real world of what you need that trap to do. It just isn't. So, you know, think about that way. And the same comes with snares. There's always been a big debate on cables and ferrules and different things like that. And I know there's a lot of guys out there that are using extension cables for traps, which is a very good system. You know, anything that keeps me away from a hammer is a good system. And you get 3/32nds and you get ferrules on there. And then you've got to think about how you're going to, you know, crimp them or hammer them or get annealed. Let me say that again. Annealed nuts, not nuts from the hardware store that's shiny and brittle, but annealed that are heated up and they're soft, kind of like trapping wire is. Which one of those is the better way? Well, there's no problem at all with using aluminum ferrules on your extension cables or your snares, but you've got to think beyond just that ferrule. A 7x7 cable is softer. If you do a good crimp on a 7x7, you're not going to have any issues. You do a standard good crimp on a 1x19 cable, you're going to have issues most of the time. If you're going to use ferrules, aluminum ferrules on 1x19 cable, you're better off from the beginning to always double up. Like when I have ferrules that I do use on 1x19, I don't have any single stops. I don't even order them. they're too short. The cable's too slick and too hard, and you won't get a bite, and you'll have popped off stops. Promise you that. Or you can go and you can use an annealed nut that's got little teeth in there, and as long as you don't put it on there so flat that you break the metal where it's going to physically break apart and crack them, that's the most secure way that I've seen. But they don't look as smooth and as slick as the double ferrules do when you're doing extension cables. And a lot of guys are making that almost like a fashion statement, it seems like. Well, they don't like the way that the anneal nuts look. It's an extension cable, for goodness sake, guys. It's to hold an animal. If you're worried about the way an extension cable looks, I don't even know what to say. I really don't. But you think about everything about your trap from a functional point of view and not a fashionable point of view, and you'll find out there's probably a lot of ways that you can save a ton of money. You know, the best shovel that I've ever used, I buy for $7 or $8 at Ace Hardware here in town. I take a grinder and I cut it down to where it's 4.5 inches. So I cut off the side, so the middle part's 4.5 inches. That will outdig any trowel known to man. Now go price a trowel and then go dig with a trowel. I would rather spend the extra money on something else in my trap line than a quote digging tool that's been used for trapping just because they got to have a specialty tool to sell to trappers. That thing that I can buy at Ace, I'm sure I can find them. And they're short-handled little, you know, D-shaped shovels. As long as the handle's good, I can cut that down. I can sharpen up the sides. I can dig like a badger with that bad boy, and it's cheap. So why would I spend more money on something else? I have no earthly idea. You know, I went from using the quote sodbuster hammers to a 24-ounce long handle digging claw hammer. I can get them anywhere that's got any type of hardware store of any kind. If I break one, I can get another one. When I wear the ends off, which happens every couple of years, I just go get another one. And to me, it works out better. But it's something that other trappers look at me funny sometimes because it's a claw hammer. It's not a quote trapping digging hammer. I can deal with that. You know, I think mine does a better job. You know, and I'm not going to just have the other one because that's what the tribe thinks that I should do. Because tribe thinking, like I said, you end up spending a ton of money that you don't need to for reasons that really don't matter except for marketing. And I know that's kind of a boring subject, but I think it's one that's really needed, really. I mean, I get these questions all the time about this. You know, I've got this trap, it didn't have crunch-proof swivels. Should I really cut the chain off? You know, that's going to be a lot of money. I bought a lot of traps. And my answer is no. If you don't see a problem, there's no reason to fix a problem that's not there. Or is it at such a small percentage? Because nothing is 100% in trapping. Nothing is 100% in trapping. You've got too many things that can go wrong, and you got too many different aspects you got to deal with, so you're never going to have 100%. And don't think that coyotes are these monsters. They're not monsters. They're not, you know, big roided up power lifters when you get them in there. There was a study done, Denver Research, I think it was in the late 70s. O'Gorman talks about it all the time. And they said a coyote could put 400 pounds of pressure on a chain. That was probably, realistically, because you got to look at studies. Realistically, can he do that more than once? Can most coyotes do that? And what were they doing for him to get 400 pounds of chain? I bet you there was a cattle prod involved, if I was a guessing man. And now you've got a bunch of adrenaline and you've got a bunch of panic to get out of the situation. and it was probably a one-time thing, but people use that number over and over and over again. But at the same time, guys, if you think that a coyote can pull 400 pounds all the time, go get a bunch of metal and weld it together where it weighs 300 pounds, 100 pounds less than 400 pounds, and hook a trap chain to it. And watch how far the coyote can move 300 pounds of dead weight on the ground. I doubt it'll be moved a quarter of an inch. From Maine coyotes all the way down to the small western coyotes. It's just not going to happen. So gearing it up for that one time thing that may happen every now and then, to me, just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Now I want to switch gears here a little bit, guys. And this is more of a trapper to trapper type thing. It's more along the lines of being a happy trapper. Being a trapper that loves life, sees that the American streets are truly paved with gold to the people that want to go out and get it and have better family lives. But more importantly, just to be a more stable mental person. And what I want to talk about is dichotomy. Dichotomy is a term that the easiest way to describe it is Republican or Democrat. That's a very common dichotomy. And if you live in this world or this fog of dichotomy all the time, you never get anything done. You're not going to make the right decisions on building a business. You're not going to make the right decisions on what you can or cannot do in your trap line. You're not going to make the right decisions on your family because you're in a enraged fighting mode state all the time, which is what people in power want you to be. That's how they want you to be all the time, is arguing with somebody else. And the reason I know that trappers are much in dichotomy as anybody else, get on Facebook tonight and type in dirt holes catch better than flat sets, or blind sets are better than dirt holes, or whatever you want to do, and watch what happens. Watch the comments. If you don't want to post something, just look at post with people. If someone likes something, watch how the comments turn into an argument, or a lot of cynicism and a lot of things that are just very negative from one trapper to the other over a particular topic. We've been taught dichotomy since we've been very little. It's the way that our country has been trained. It's the way it's marketed to. And we've been taught that that is a positive thing. Because people want to do positive things. I mean, unless you're just a psychopath, you want to do positive things. So you've been taught, and I've been taught, and I didn't even figure this out to 2 or 3 years ago, and it's been life-changing for me. I mean, it really has. My happiness level has went really, really high. I enjoy trapping more. I enjoy gardening more. I enjoy being with my wife more. I enjoy being around friends more. But I will not get in the dichotomy game. I will just step back, wait till it's over, and when we want to talk like rational human beings again, I'm all for it. But I won't be in dichotomy. And the reason I know this is going on is I'm already getting all kind of stuff on email and private messages where this candidate said something that's similar to Hitler, and that candidate said something similar to Malcolm X, and you know, someone says something that's really close to what a Muslim cleric says somewhere, and it's always trying to prove one side of dichotomy. I mean, someone has taken the time to read, study, make the thing, circulate it around, other people are circulating around. Look how much energy and human hour production went into doing that. Now, if you're a very conservative person, sending that to conservative people, is it making any difference if that person's going to be conservative or not? No. If you're a conservative person sending that to a liberal person, What do you think that's going to do? Is it going to prove them wrong? Is that going to get them to change their views, change their side, vote your way? No. So what is the net result of doing something like that? Nothing. I mean, it's really nothing. Now, I do think social media has some really cool applications where you can expose some stuff to a lot of people that may not understand some stuff. But if you go about it with a see, my side is better than your side, and I'm getting ready to bitch slap you with this information, and unless you're an ignorant fool, you're going to come over to my side, it don't work. But if social media was used to ask the right questions, which are never through the view of dichotomy, all of a sudden then people can start asking the right questions and not be in dichotomy, and that's where some really cool stuff starts happening. But the biggest thing about the dichotomy, because they're already ramping up the presidential elections, and I'm here to tell you guys, don't waste your time or energy sending me stuff like that on Facebook or text or PMs. I don't care. I do not care. Because I understand now, after sitting back and watching for 46 years, for probably 43 years of my life, I've been a tool. And I don't mean that as in a good, you know, tool to do something. I'm talking about a tool like a sucker for conservatives, or the conservative, quote, party, the Republicans. Not anymore. If you want to know what I am, as close as I know how to describe it, is a feral libertarian. Or a feral... someone that believes in almost just right before pure anarchy. And if you've ever been around a feral cat, they're usually pretty fat and happy. They don't want your pets. They don't want your protection. They don't want your food. They don't want to live in your house. They just want to be left alone. They want to be a cat. They don't want to be domesticated. They don't want to be civilized. They just want to be a cat. I just want to be a free American that has liberty. That's it. And inside a dichotomy, you can't have that, because whether you want to believe it or not, the Republicans want to force down the throats of their opponents their way of thinking, and that's not liberty or freedom. The Democrats want to force their way of thinking down non-democratic people's throats, and that's not liberty or freedom. So therefore, I'm not interested in either one whatsoever. And as I came down this journey of understanding dichotomy, I heard it probably 3 or 4 years ago. A guy was talking about silver, and he did a whole video on dichotomy, and it made me mad the first time I heard it, because no one wants to believe that they've been a sucker for their whole life, and they're fighting for somebody being a sucker, and they're wasting their energy because no one wants to believe that. And they don't want to believe they're pawns for people that they really don't have very much respect for. So it's humiliating, and it's frustrating when you kind of start seeing the light on that. But it's one of those things, guys, if you stay away from it, now you can start asking the right questions. Now, what are some examples of dichotomy? Is Ron Paul for or against, I don't know, abortion? Well, ask your friends that. Watch what happens. The training from grade school up will kick in. If someone is for abortion, they will start beating up the Republicans and Ron Paul and talking about this and that, and the other people that are not from the liberal side will stand up and have a fight and get mad and start actually being destructive towards each other over abortion. Well, the real question is, what does it matter if Ron Paul is for or against abortion? The executive branch of the United States government is not the judicial branch. So whether he's for or against abortion is irrelevant. So why is it such a big topic every single time that we have a presidential or Congress or senatorial race. It's because it gets everybody in the right mindset for dichotomy, which makes them a tool. Because whether the president wants abortion or doesn't want abortion, the Supreme Court is the one that makes that judgment, not the president. Lower taxes, high taxes. Unions, non-unions. Public schools, private schools. They're all forms of dichotomy, and they're always the biggest, the absolute worst things. You've got environmentalism, and you've got non-environmentalism, which to me is the most kookiest thing in the world. You've got crazy people on the environmental side that are completely off the rails on that. But even someone that's conservative that doesn't consider themselves an environmentalist does not want someone dumping toxic waste in their front yard as their kids walk through it barefooted. So everybody wants to have a decent environment. You have businesses and non-businesses. And what this does, guys, the reason this is so impactful, and if you're still listening to this and you haven't turned off the radio, I want you to understand why this is so important to a two-party system. Your founding fathers, if you're conservative, which most people that listen to this show are, if you're conservative and you're in dichotomy and you're fighting for the Republicans, you are not following the footsteps of our founding fathers. George Washington was very clear that a two-party system would destroy America. And he's absolutely right. Because two-party brings in dichotomy. Dichotomy brings in the people have no power. And what do I mean? If you think your vote matters, and you think that if you vote for Ted Cruz or Hillary Clinton, that that's going to make a difference if they get elected, I want you, every time that you get in a political talk with somebody and y'all go into the dichotomy battle over taxes or gay marriage or whatever it is, you need to automatically register from this point on, my vote does not matter. And it doesn't matter, and here's why. Because if you're going to vote for lower taxes, and the person that you're fighting with is going to vote for higher taxes because the rich are evil, and y'all getting a big blowed up argument about it, if one votes one way and one votes the other, what's the net result? Zero. Zero. Which means nothing is happening. You know, and if you stay in that mindset, and that you're not asking the right questions. Why do we pay the government so much in taxes? What does the government do with those taxes? Does the government have the right to tax us? You start asking questions now that actually make a little bit of sense. And you can have a conversation with someone that starts making a little bit of sense. And when you start asking the right questions, not the questions that the candidates want you to ask, and not the questions that the media, including Fox News, all the way down to MSNBC, tell you is important. But if you start asking really true questions, you start seeing the world in a little bit different manner. If you're a teacher, or if you're in the school system, and someone's talking about private schools, all of a sudden the system starts getting defended on one side and attacked on the other. You just counted each other's votes out. Now, if both people have come to the same conclusion that the purpose of school is to train children for the modern times, for the modern business cycles that we have today, that is the goal of school, to educate children for that purpose. Both people have common ground as long as they stay out of the dichotomy of it. But not if you stay in the public school versus private school. Well, the kids are not learning anything. Or we need more money. Well, the Democrats want to give the school more money and the Republicans don't. And you go back and forth and back and forth. If you don't think the economy is live and well, watch Fox News for 30 minutes. Every 2 or 3 minutes, you're going to have a Republican get on and a Democrat get on, or a conservative and a liberal, and there's going to be a question raised, and they're gonna catfight each other when it's said and done. No solutions or no real questions have been asked, and then the reporter will smile at you, and they'll go to the next liberal and the next conservative, and they'll catfight and try to, you know, put in these little swings at each other and try to be very cynical and make the other one look stupid. Then nothing productive comes out of it. Then they'll go to the next, and this repeats over and over. You see the same thing on CNN and everything else. And when you watch the local Evelyn News, they do the same thing. And, you know, it's, should your kids be allowed to go to the park by themselves? And you'll have one where you've got child molesters behind every bush. And other parents are like, you got to let kids grow up sometimes. And you're a bad parent. You can't call me a bad parent. And this goes on and on. Where statistically, a logical person steps back and goes, well, is the rates of kid kidnapping going up or down? Is child molesting going up or down? And most parents that would never, ever, under any circumstances, let their kid out of their sight because of some guy in a long trench coat behind every bush in their neighborhood is going to go, yeah, it's worse. I see it on the news all the time. It's more dangerous today. Well, a logical person steps back, looks at the numbers, and goes, well, you know, really, child kidnapping is way down. When we were kids, they were a lot more. Kids getting abused in certain ways were a lot higher when we were kids, and we did a whole lot more than you would ever let a kid do today because the state would call you a child abuser. So the question should be, why is the state telling us we can or cannot raise our kids this way? Who gives the state that power? Why do we listen to the state? What can we do locally to get out from under this situation of having a helicopter or an oppressive local or federal government that tells us how we can or not raise our kids? Those questions start going to some pretty interesting places. And most people, if you can get past the dichotomy of it, are worse. I mean, we'll work some stuff out. I personally am not going to waste any time or energy or resources or get mad, get upset over what a politician thinks. Don't care what they think. To me, if Tom Cruise or Ron Paul gets into office and they actually do what they say they're going to do, and we start getting a smaller government, lower taxes, start controlling the EPA and get rid of the IRS and get rid of the federal education system that doesn't educate anybody, and they do the things they actually talk about, then I will actually pay attention to what they're doing and not what they're saying. Because on one side of the dichotomy rule, people that are for Obama only talk about what Obama says, not what he does, but what he says. People on the other side that don't like Obama talk about what he does and not what he says, and he's lying, and they go down this road, and it always ends up back in a catfight over Obama. Why in the world is anybody giving Obama the time of day? Why would you waste one bit of mental energy over what Obama's doing? You're not going to change it. You and your friend arguing over it is not going to change anything. Nothing is going to be different. No matter if there's 20 million people arguing for Obama and 20 million people arguing against Obama, it is a zero net of anything happening because no one's asking better questions because they're living in dichotomy. Now, there's going to be some guys, I know it, that are going to get upset at what I'm saying, where I say that your vote does not matter, because it really doesn't, and I'm going to tell you why. For one, the American government does not represent the citizens. I know you've been taught that your whole life. It does not. If so, how do they keep raising taxes? How do we have Obamacare, and why won't we shut our borders? I watched a poll this morning. 80% of Americans think that a estate tax, which destroys farms and small businesses and bankrupts people's estates because most of them are asset-based and not cash-based, They think that it's immoral and should be taken away. The government is getting ready to raise it. So where in there, anywhere, is the government is being a representative of the people? I can't find it. So therefore, I'm no longer going to sit there and try to want to believe that they are representing us. They're not. There's about 40% of Americans that are conservative, and there's about 40% of Americans that are very liberal. That is a net zero in the polls. It doesn't matter if all of them vote, it is a net zero in the poll. 40 votes for Republicans is zero, and 40 million Republicans and 40 million Democrats. Or it's 40%, so you'd have to do that by 310 million or whatever it is we have now. There's about 15% of the population, 12 to 15%, that don't even know who's president, doesn't care who president. The only thing they know is what happens on some reality show or where they're getting, you know, their next form of entertainment from. They don't have any idea about government. They don't know there's three branches of government. They don't know anything. So all the people that are into the politics that are fighting each other are zero. Now you've got 12 to 15% of people that don't know but are going to vote. And what are they going to vote for? More or less stuff for themselves. And then you got 6 to 8% of people that are pretty much like me. And people like me that think this way is actually not as unique as a lot of people think. You just don't see it on the news because it scares everybody to death that's in power, including news organizations. Because it would take the game away. Well, we're just going, eh, I'm going to keep up with what you're doing to figure out how to get around it or stay out of the way of it the best that I can. Because I realize that no matter how mad I get, and unlike Tennessee, nobody in Washington, D.C. cares. So I'm going to figure out ways to run my business, start a new business, expand different things that I'm doing to make my life more stable, my family's life more stable, that is not based on the dichotomy of Washington, D.C. That means I get to start doing things that actually matter instead of arguing with somebody else that's going to cancel your vote out. Well, yours don't matter either, but you've spent all that energy. So who is actually electing everybody in the country? The 12 to 15% of people that don't know, don't care, and shouldn't be voting anyway. I mean, they really don't. I personally, my question is, that like a very good question to ask, if someone does not pay positive in taxes, why do they get the right to vote? That would be a better question to ask. Because if someone's not paying into the system, they shouldn't be getting rewards of that system. And I know there's going to be examples of disabled people and stuff, but that's not what I'm talking about. And I'm not going to go down that dichotomy road with you. You know exactly what I mean. If somebody is not paying in, but they have the opportunity to vote to take away from somebody else, they shouldn't have the right to steal from their neighbors through subsidies and taxes and so forth and so forth. That's a better question to ask. And if as the presidential election goes, I want you to just kind of keep this in the back of your mind, guys, because it'll make you so much happier. Because your blood pressure stays down. You're not arguing with people. You're much better to find common ground. And I don't care if you're a trapper, you got things in common with productive things that can happen if you go to the most off-the-wall, insane animal rights activist that's gay, that lives in a city, and this, that, and the other. Because you know what? They want their kids to grow up in a better place. They want to be financially stable, just like you. They want to have somewhere where the air doesn't kill them, the water doesn't kill them. They have the opportunities that America was based on. They want the same things that other do, but you never get there because you're arguing on the minute things that doesn't matter. I don't care if somebody's gay. It ain't going to turn me gay. They're not forcing me to be gay. If they don't want to trap and they're against trapping, who cares? They don't have any influence over making trapping illegal. So it doesn't really matter. Not in the long run, it doesn't matter. So why am I going to argue with them? It's that 12 to 15% that's in the middle that's the only one that makes a difference. In most logical people, unless you get into the dichotomy game and you start asking more questions, I've had several people, I've met several Democrats and liberals that when this starts coming up, I'll just go, no, you're not a liberal. And they go, yes, I am. No, you're not. I mean, do you want someone else to tell you how to raise your kids? Do you want someone else to take most of your money? This, that, and the other. You can go to common ground that everybody agrees on, and now everybody's stronger. And then when you have common ground, then you can start asking questions. And when you start asking the right questions, it gets people thinking. Because the biggest weapon against all the crap that goes on in our daily lives that we usually get so mad about can be taken care of pretty sympathy. It's simply, it's through apathy. Well, we just don't care what the federal government says. Because if we don't care what they say, you know, they really don't have very much power after a while. Or through the mindset of insurrection. Insurrection is not revolution. Insurrection is you just keep doing things you need to do and figuring out ways from the bottom up to where everybody has more freedom, and then all of a sudden the people at the top don't have any power. Very different from revolution. Insurrection is way more powerful and way more scary for the federal government. Federal government don't care if you want to start a revolution. Insurrection scares them to death. And most of that starts happening when people start looking at politicians in Washington through apathy. Because every time you fight for them, you give them power. They definitely have power over you. I mean, you tell your kids, if you get in an argument with somebody at school when they're little, and they get in a fight or they get in a big argument and the kids are fuming about it for 4 or 5 days, most parents will eventually in one form or another go, look, you know, why are you giving them power over you? They've ruined 3 days of your life, this, that, and the other. It's the same thing for politics. It's the same thing for most issues that we get so excited about. And the sad part is, all that energy could be used for something positive. Take your kid fishing. Grow a garden. Insulate yourself against inflation. Learn how to do different skills. Go get some more property to trap. Learn how to be a better trapper. Modify some traps. See, all that can be productive. Arguing with someone in the form of dichotomy is not productive. And it's just like the little kid that fumes because someone doesn't like their tennis shoes when they're little, and they worry about that for a week. They wasted a whole week of their life worrying about other people they don't care about over shoes that don't matter. You get those people that picked on the kid have all the power over the kid because their life and their mindset and their emotions and their everything about them, they gave the power to the bullies that are picking on them. If you don't give the bully the power of your emotions and your mental time and your money, anybody that gives money to the Republicans and Democrats, as far as I'm concerned, is insane. But if you want to, knock yourself out. We live in a free country. But I'm not going to give them money. I mean, I really believe, starve the beast. Take away the money, they got no power. Because they ain't good at nothing, they can't create nothing, they can't do anything without taking money from somebody else. So you take it away from them. That's pretty simple. And that's why I always talk about starting your own business. It puts your particular lifestyle and your freedom and your income and everything in your hands. That's the reason I'm always talking about business. That's the reason, as some of you may have seen, I've got an Instagram account now. I do not talk about trapping on there. I'm not ashamed of trapping, no matter what somebody says. I'm not going to get in an argument with over that. I got an Instagram account because I'm growing edible plants to sell, and I'm using that as a way to connect with people that would probably want to buy those plants. Why am I going to bring in something that's just going to cause dichotomy? If they Google Clint Locklear, they're going to find out I'm a trapper, and I'll be glad to talk with them about it, but I'm not going to argue with them about it. They decide they don't want my plants, that's fine. But I'm using Instagram as a way for reaching different people that I don't know through that format. But I'm not going to argue with people when they find out I'm a trapper. Not going to do it. The reason I've gave up on trying to talk to antis about it, because it's a waste of time. The canceling each other's vote doesn't make any difference anyway. Why am I going to waste my energy on it? And as the elections come closer, guys, I want you to have a vivid mental picture of what's probably going to happen when everybody goes to the voting booth, just like it has happened for the 46 years that I've been alive. This is the most important election of our lifetime, which is a ball-face lie. If I don't vote for this person, that person's going to get elected, and we're going to be all living under a bridge. We're going to be gunless. We're going to be homeless. We're going to be moneyless. We're going to be everythingless, and it's going to be horrible, and we're going to be just like North Korea. We're going to be starving to death. Our kids are going to be stupid. Our wives are going to leave us. Everything's going to go bad if the other person gets in. It's a lie. Because no matter who gets in, until the federal government can show me through their actions that they're actually going to get smaller, they're actually going to use our money wisely, they're going to give us back our liberty, they're going to quit spying on us, they're going to quit doing everything that they're doing that they're saying that they're not going to do when they're running as for a candidate, I don't believe them anymore. I mean, if you don't think advertising is crazy, look at all the infomercials you see on stuff that people buy that only works one or two times. It's the cheapest product they can get, and they still sell millions and millions of dollars of it to the same people over and over again, and that's what the political system is. So why would you put any energy into it? Do epic things in your own life and get things done where you're secure, so if the time ever comes where you need to help other people, you're in a position to help other people. And to me, that is what being a responsible citizen is. Anyway, but the vivid thing that I want to close with, guys, is I want you to think about what's happening when you go to the polling booth, because you only have two parties. And you're told you're given a choice, but you're not. It's like the old joke. Well, the plant, you got a choice between two plantation owners, and you're a free person because you get to choose between which plantation owner you have. So you're going to the poll, and you don't want, say, because most people here are going to say they don't want Hillary Clinton or who's ever going to be the Democrats, and then the machine of the Republican Party is gonna do everything in their power where somewhere like Tom Cruise or Rand Paul or one of these guys that really wants to change Washington, that I truly believe they want to. I don't know if they can or if they will. Until they prove it, it doesn't matter. But they're gonna do everything so you get somebody like a Jeb Bush or somebody's just a good old boy that's gonna do the same thing they've always done. They're gonna market it a little bit different. People are gonna fight for it and be a sucker for it and do the thing same. But when it all comes down, it's gonna be the lesser of two evils. Now, if you've been to more than one or two elections, you know exactly what that means. You're gonna hold your nose when you vote. But I want you to think of it in a different way, guys. On one side of the street, you see a urinal that's had 10,000 people peeing and pooping in it. And on the right hand of the street, you see another urinal that's a different color. This one's red. And there's been 10,000 people peeing and pooping in it. And that has been in there for 3 months. And it's hot outside, and there's no vent coming off the top, and it's just as nasty as can be. Now, the one that's on the left-hand side is the Democrats, and it's blue. And if you're a Republican, you're going to look over there and you're going to go, there's no way I'm drinking out of that porta potty. And they're going, come over here and we will let you get on your knees and put your head in the toilet bowl of the porta potty and drink till you're full. And you're going to go, nope. But I don't want them people over there to be elected. So then you're going to look on the right-hand side of the street, and you got the red porta potty that's just as nasty, just as stinky, and is just going to make you just as sick. But because of dichotomy, you're going to look over there, and the Republican in the suit is going to hold up a little bitty cup that's clean. And he's going to dip it in the porta potty, and he's going to let you drink out of the clean cup. It's got the same thing you don't want to drink out of the other one. But either way, when you go down that road, you're drinking out of the porta potty. I personally don't want to drink out of the porta potty. And I'm not going to drink out of the porta potty. And I'm not going to vote for the lesser of two evils. And I'm not going to argue for political parties. I'm not going to spend my energy canceling out my vote and not asking the right questions and doing the best thing for me so I can be a more stable citizen for people in my community. I'm not going down that road anymore. I'm probably going to vote. I think it's a cool thing to be able to vote. It's a right to be able to vote. It's also a right not to be able to vote. But I would rather vote for Mickey Mouse, which there's a campaign going around, by the way, on Facebook and other social medias where people are talking about writing in Mickey Mouse. So maybe they'd get 20-30% of Mickey Mouse would get 20-30% of the vote. Kind of a formal protest thing. I would rather vote for Mickey Mouse than I would somebody that's going to do the same thing where my taxes are higher, the education of the kids get lower, the big businesses that are in cronyism within the government keep writing the laws and getting all the payouts, and Wall Street gets $40 billion a month and they still can't make any money in Wall Street if you take that money away from them. Give me $40 billion, I guarantee I'll figure out a way to make income off of that. All those things are not going to change. So why am I going to give them my permission with my name and Social Security to keep doing the same thing? I'm not. But more importantly, I'm not going to give them my energy fighting for them either. Because when you're fighting for somebody that's going to screw you in the end, you're doing nothing but picking one plantation over the other. Because if you're a conservative, everything the Republicans stand for, you find offensive. And it's offensive when you break it down to the smallest level, is they want to force you, they want to force their liberal agenda down your throat, which is not liberty, not freedom, and not what a free man of America should even consider. But on the Republican side, they also want to force down the other part of America's throat, their agenda. Just because you like one agenda over another, you should never want to have to force it down somebody else's throat. Laws and policies should be very simple. If it's not picking somebody's pocket or breaking somebody's leg, and if you don't know where that comes from, you should Google it. That's all the policies and all the laws that we need in America. And until we get to that point, or there's somebody that wants to go to that point and proves to me that they can actually do it or will do it or try to do it or fight to do it, which is fight's a funny word. You always hear politicians talking about fighting, but they're all in $3,000 suits and they're prim and proper. If politicians were fighting, they'd have black eyes, bloody noses, and missing teeth. You don't see it because they don't fight. It's a game, guys. It's a game. And the people that are in the game more than anybody else are the people that are fighting for people that don't know who they are and they could care less about and that they don't represent. So don't waste your energy on them. Do some cool stuff in your own life. They're going to do what they're going to do, and there's nothing that your vote's going to do about it because it's already crossed out by the opposite end of the vote anyway. So just keep that in mind. Don't be sending me stuff because I'm not going to get into the arguments and the debates on it. If you want to argue about politics and this, that, and the other and talk about who's like Hitler, do it on your own time, not with mine. And I'll see y'all next week, and we'll figure out what we're going to get into on Trappin' Radio then. Alrighty, guys. Bye.